Big show for you here today. It is our prospect deep dive series. We're starting off today with quarterbacks, and this year, Ray Garvin joins me every Thursday leading up to the NFL draft to dive into this position, the most important position in the NFL. Maybe not the sexiest in this year's draft class, but we have a deep dive to jump into with Fernando Mendoza. You got to know about this guy. He's going to go first in the draft. We're going to care about him in the NFL. We're going to care about him in fantasy. Plus some notes on what makes Ty Simpson an interesting prospect and the quarterback who's the best prospect ever if you just never actually watch his film. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball because it is the start of our Prospect Deep Dive series, and joining us to deep dive on these prospects this year, he's back. It is our guy, Ray Garvin. Ray, what's going on, buddy?
Let's go. Let's go. Gas me up, baby. I'm back. It's feeling good, Matt. 2026 NFL draft right around the corner, and I get to chop it up with you. I am excited, my friend.
It's good. It is good to see you, Ray. I got to say, I'm a little disappointed that you're not wearing the cowboy hat today on your grand return to the podcast. So nevertheless, though, it's good. Why no cowboy hat? What's the deal?
I got a fresh cut, Harmon. I got a fresh cut for the show. I did this for you, baby. I got the fresh baldy today, man. So, you know, we got to talk about this riveting position right here. It might make you pull your hair out. And, you know, I don't have any. So I just said, you know, no cowboy hat today. We'll just go with the clean cut GQ today. But we'll have some fun. I promise you we'll make it a good one, baby.
No doubt. We are going to have some fun today. As Ray mentioned, we're previewing the most important position in the NFL today in terms of prospects in this year's class. It's not necessarily, well, we'll unpack it. It's maybe not the most exciting quarterback class that we've ever talked about here on the show, but it is, I still think, a fascinating group, especially up at the top. But yes, in all of these shows that Ray is going to be joining us here every Thursday leading up to the NFL draft at the end of April, we're going to go position by position and preview all of the fantasy relevant positions. We're going to do, I think Ray, you might not be on this show for us. I think we might have Nate for this one. We're going to do offensive line as well, because that matters. Okay. Offensive linemen matter, but still, nevertheless, Ray is going to join us here to preview quarterbacks, running backs. I think we might have a two-parter at wide receiver as well. So tons to dive in here with Ray over the next month plus. We're going to go through all these prospects, strengths, weaknesses, where they might fit best in the NFL. And of course, For your Dynasty Superflex leagues, you got to be locked into some of these guys at the top as well. But I mentioned this, Ray, and you kind of alluded to it as well. Not the sexiest quarterback class in the world, but before we dive into some of these players specifically, give the people who are just locking into the NFL draft now that free agency is over kind of like a 30,000-foot view of this class as a whole.
Yeah, this class is, I frame it this way. There was a lot of excitement for this class coming into the season. And just about every quarterback that most big-name draft analysts had pegged at the top of their board coming into this college football season, they kind of failed, Matt. And it leaves us in this weird spot where, yeah, they kind of failed. There are quite a few names on the list that you see here that were nowhere to be found at the start of the season, including the number one player on the board, Fernando Mendoza. But you're talking about Sam Levitt, nowhere to be found. Cade Klubnik's not on this list. At a high clip. The kid out of South Carolina, Lenore Sellers, not in this class as well. So there was a lot of hype and enthusiasm and excitement about this. Our very own Nate Tice even said, oh, if it were Arch Manning were in this class, he would have been the number one overall pick, but he decided to go back to school. Mm-hmm. So we're left at this spot where we're really trying to find out, do any of these guys have a specific skill set that can work at the next level? And maybe framing it this way, Matt, maybe not a day one locked and loaded guy, but is there something that a team can work with down the line to develop these guys into a competent starter down the line? And I think that's what we'll talk about today.
Yeah, I think it's good to frame it that way because this is the case every year that as soon as the current NFL draft ends, all the big name draft analysts are like, don't worry, next year's quarterback class is going to be a lot better. And there was some of that talk after the class that we just had where Cam Ward went first overall. And then that was kind of Jackson Dart, Tyler Shuck, the whole deal. Shedeur Sanders fell to the fifth round. There was some of that talk, but a lot of the prospects said, even some of the ones we're going to break down here today, just didn't really have the season that they were hoping for. So we'll see what the 2027 class looks like, but I don't want to sort of just throw our hands up and be like, well, this isn't a good quarterback class, so don't worry about it, because guys come out of nowhere. Brock Purdy was the last player drafted, and he's taken his team to the Super Bowl. He's a damn good quarterback in his own right because he landed in the right situation. So we're going to break these guys down each individually to see if we can find out how some of these guys might succeed in the league or what the probabilities are. But we will start with the consensus top-ranked quarterback. And I'm actually really excited to talk about Fernando Mendoza with you, Ray, because I said this on, I believe, our first Mock Draft Monday of the season this year, that I just feel like we're going to go through this cycle and not talk about him enough. And people who aren't dialed in on draft analysis are not really going to have a good grasp of who he is. And certainly people who don't watch college football during the season, because it's like, well, he's the first overall pick, he's going to the Raiders, okay, skip to next, like, where are we going next? But I really am excited to unpack him because he's a very, very fascinating player. Give me kind of your view of who Mendoza is and what type of quarterback prospect he is.
Yeah, he is your prototypical guy. You're talking about 6'5", 236 pounds, experience. He's played a lot, different conferences. Was very good at Cal. A lot of people have just kind of figured out who Fernando Mendoza was this year because of the most improbable turnaround in college football history, and it's not even a question what happened at Indiana this past fall. But you're talking about prototypical size, the football IQ, seems like he loves the game, and then when you talk about the physical skills, he can do just about everything. He's not this new age dynamic dual threat type of quarterback, and he doesn't need to be that because he's an elite processor. He knows how to play the game. And one of those little intangibles that you see show up over the tape, over and over in big game moments, is the ability to win, that will to win, figuring it out when all things aren't perfect, when the environment isn't scripted up in a way that just makes things easy. Fernando Mendoza has always found a way to get it done. And I'll point back to this, Matt. Back in 2023, when he was at Cal, he went toe-to-toe, blow-for-blow with former number one overall pick Caleb Williams. Blow-for-blow. Mm. They lost that game, I believe, by 1 point, 49-50. But you look at the box score and you watch that game, you're like, man, who is this guy from Cal that's literally taken this number one overall pick Caleb Williams blow-for-blow in that game? And that's sort of the start of his sort of maturation to become what he is now. But he's got a lot of things that the NFL will find very valuable and very useful, and that's why he's going to go number one.
Great breakdown there, and good to just kind of give the full picture of Mendoza. And yeah, we mentioned, like, hey, this quarterback class, what was it supposed to be last year? Some of these bigger names that didn't really have the season that they wanted. Again, shout out to Nate Tice and Corey Kinnon as well, were the two guys who were, like, talking about Mendoza as the QB1 of the class last summer. Like before the season even started, and like a guy to watch out for. And he really became that player more so over the course of this year, as Indiana, of course, went to the national championship, won the national championship. He was the Heisman winner, the whole deal. And yeah, it's fascinating. Like, I'll just kind of give some of my thoughts here about Mendoza, Ray, just as a player, because he's the one I've seen the most of, because I've been working so much on these Indiana wide receivers for reception perception. I went and like spam watched all of these quarterbacks over the last few days to prepare for this show. But Mendoza, I'd seen a good bit of, obviously, before this. And I think what's funny is, like, I'd heard, like, okay, you know, he's like a Kirk Cousins type, might be sort of what he is as a quarterback. And I think he gets some of that, to be fully transparent, because when you hear him talk, he's like a little bit of a dork. I mean, he clearly loves football and, like, is all about the right stuff. He sounds like Kirk Cousins. He puts off a Kirk Cousins type of vibe. But when you go watch him play, number one, he's way bigger than that. You mentioned it, 6'5", 236, and seeing him at the combine, like, he looks built like that. He's a big dude, is well put together. People forget Kirk Cousins, like, 6'3", 204 pounds. Like, he's a much more thinner quarterback, which is why when he was with the Vikings, he was getting, like, folded in half that one season, taking these big hits. You know, there were a little bit of injuries here and there. Mendoza, much bigger than you think. He also is a guy that, like, when you watch that Indiana offense, it's a ton of like RPOs, which I think is, we can have a discussion about that, but that's a big part of just watching that offense as a whole. But he's super tough. I thought the arm talent really took me by surprise. Again, you think like, oh, he's this Kirk Cousins guy. Like, no, the arm talent is legit. Like, he can drive the football. He can access all three areas. So the ball placement is really good. And particularly, like, this comes up all the time when you're watching Omar Cooper Jr. He can drive the football to the far side of the field on these outbreaking routes. Like, he has the arm to do that. So I think for people that might be imagining him as this Kirk Cousins type or whatever, which is funny because the Raiders are rumored to want to sign Kirk Cousins to maybe kind of be the backup here to Fernando Mendoza, I think it's important to note, like, this guy's way more physically talented. I to me personally, I think more than a guy like Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, absolutely. They're not even the same as far as physical, just physical attributes and what they bring to the table. The arm strength is no issue for Fernando Mendoza. I don't think you're going to confuse him for having this Josh Allen level of cannon, which we all know you don't even need that to be successful at the next level. It's how you operate in the confines of your offense and how you distribute the ball to your playmakers. And do you have the it factor? And you see, you saw it multiple times throughout their improbable run. There was a game versus Penn State when he got the ball late before that game-winning throw to Omar Cooper. He took a sack. First play of the drive, he was sacked. They were behind the sticks, and it was just dialing it up all the way down the field, hitting Charlie Becker, getting his open receivers, finding Omar Cooper. It's that level of, we got to have it, and he always comes through clutch. National championship game, he didn't play great the entire game. You go back and you watch that Natty game, he was fine. I thought he played well, but at the end, gotta have it moment, that draw play, getting it done versus Miami and that tough defense. It's moments like that for Mendoza that really shine above everything else. When the X's and O's break down, when things aren't scripted up to go right, when your first read isn't open, when your second read isn't open, what do you do? And when the X's and O's break down, he has shown time and time and time again that he can figure it out. That doesn't mean he's perfect, because he's not a perfect quarterback prospect. But he is far more than just a Kirk Cousins level of player. Who Cousins was drafted, I think, round 3, round 4, the year he came out
round
with
four,
RG3 in 2012. Yeah, out of Michigan State. So not a fair comparison in my opinion. But yeah, I get why he gets some of the comparisons because of the post game interviews and his demeanor and how he talks. But I love his fire on the field.
No, I think that, like, who he is, just clearly loves football, is like just himself. I think that comes through in his playing style, which is really cool to see as well. So I love how you just talk about him as a clutch player. He's so good in these back shoulder throws. Elijah Surratt, not a guy that gets a lot of separation on the outside, but man, those, just, he places those contested passes perfectly for him. So I do think accuracy and ball placement are really big kind of just strengths of his game. Let's talk through some of just maybe the weaknesses or things like he needs to get better on, maybe some questions that you have about him after watching the tape and seeing his career.
Yeah, pressure's the big one for me. Pressure, I think that is his vulnerability. 50% completion against true pressures, 53 when he's forced to move. He definitely feels, it's weird because you watch him and he definitely has more athleticism than people give him credit for. But outside of structure, moving around, there's some throws where he's jumping off of one foot, throwing kind of cross body, looks a little deer in the headlights when there is pressure. He's going to have to work on that a little bit. And I do think that some of that is due to the fact that he played exclusively out of shotgun. I mean, he had two center snaps this year. He does not play under center. So I wonder how much of that is just what he's seeing, eye dressing, window dressing from the defense. But when there's pressure there, that's a little problematic for him. Limited athleticism, but not a bad athlete. I hope that's coming off right. He's not somebody that's going to move around and run around and create. Like, he needs to stay within structure, but he's got some athleticism. He's a pure pocket passer that can move a little bit. So I think that's a little bit of a weakness for him. And then just continuing to work on his sort of intermediate of the field throws. you look on tape and there's not a lot of stuff over the middle of the field. And that's one thing that I've been learning, especially looking at the quarterbacks. I want to see a lot. I want to see you operate and command the center of that field. Outside, you talked about the far hash throws, sideline throws, downfield throws. All that is great. I want a little more work over the middle of the field, and maybe that was due to some of the personnel that he had. You got a big play guy, Charlie Becker. We will be talking about him next year at the wide receiver spot. You talked about Omar Cooper Jr. And Elijah Surratt. Just want to see him work a little bit over the middle of the field better, but those are things that I think will be helped out by a good offensive coordinator at the next level.
Right. It's one of those things that I had the same notes over here that, like, I just wish I had more over the middle throws from him on tape. And I think, is that a structure of the offense thing? My guess is yes. When I give off my player, I'm curious what your player comparison is. Like, when I have my player comparison, I think it's going to kind of come back to sort of this exact question, which is, the offense, is it because of the structure of it, is because of what they want to do, or is it because he doesn't really operate that way? I tend to think it's more just the structure of the offense, which, like I said, very RPO heavy, doesn't ask him to go full field progressions, anything like that. I mean, the routes that, like, again, Surratt as that perimeter receiver is running, I haven't dialed in as much on Becker. I'm very curious as to your nickname for Becker, if we get to that point, along the same you know what I'm talking about over there. Curious, you got a while to workshop on that one, but we'll get to that next year. So I haven't dialed in as much in him, but with, like, Surratt, a lot of his route tree is very just like static X receiver stuff. Cooper's running the outbreakers from the slot, the whole deal. So again, is it personnel? Is it the system, or is it him? Because if he goes to the Raiders, which he will be going to the Raiders first overall, he's going to have to make a lot of throws over the middle. Like, that's an offense that, like, if we watched Clint Kubiak in Seattle last year, they want to drive over the middle. That's where they want to access their explosive plays. So that is a question he has to answer. In addition to some of the stuff, like, I don't know, Ray, I think he's, like, heavy-footed against pressure sometimes, where, like, it's just speed it up a little bit. Like, the motion of it within the pocket is kind of the way I would say it. It's not as if he is, you know, turtling under pressure like early career Jimmy Garoppolo or early career Derek Carr or anything like that. It's just like, we got to speed those feet up so that we can reset and access like a throw under pressure, as opposed to like, all right, I'm pulling the rip cord here. Because there's a lot of times too where I do think, like, yeah, he's not going to bail out of the pocket and like be that Caleb Williams improvisational type, but as a runner, he's pretty rugged. He's pretty tough. And like, he's more of like an up the gut downhill runner as opposed to sideline to sideline.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I mean. That's the heavy footedness, what you said about him, is that blends perfectly with what I was saying with pressure, right? And you saw that versus Miami when Mesidor and Bain were getting after him. It was a little shaky there for Mendoza, but running up the gut, I don't want to say Dante Culpepper-esque, because Culpepper wasn't fleet of foot, but he can run the ball. It's not something that I think you want his attribute to. You get what I'm saying? Like, he's not a dual threat guy, but he can run a little bit. You know what I mean?
100%. I thought about, like, it's been so long, obviously, since he played in the NFL, but like Andrew Luck, right, where he was just more of this like powerful runner. I think there's something like that. I'll give my comparison here now, because I think like it kind of encapsulates what I think of him as a player. He's like Trevor Lawrence to me, where Trevor Lawrence was very much like, and it took like Trevor a minute to become the scrambler that he was last year. And I remember talking about it on the show over the years, like, where, like, Trevor, like, let's take off and run a little bit. And I think Liam Cohen's been good about this with Baker and then with Trevor last year. It's like, stop running to, like, Baker especially, stop bailing off the right tackle, just run it up the gut, because you've got some power to you. You've got a little straight line pop. That's kind of why I like the Lawrence comparison. Again, same thing where, like, arm talent wise, I think they're pretty similar, where they're not these overwhelming talents, but good enough all the way across. Very accurate ball placement is there, especially as prospects. But Trevor Lawrence, just like Fernando Mendoza, came out of an offense that was very RPO heavy. But you think he checks all the, at least I do, you think he checks all the boxes of a guy that can develop beyond that kind of Mickey Mouse type of offense. So that's just sort of who he reminds me of as a prospect and as a player.
Yeah, I think that's a really good one, Trevor Lawrence. Especially given how Lawrence played at Clemson, I can see that. For me, it's one of the comps that you see quite a bit. You see one here on the screen, Matt Ryan. I think that would be ceiling level comp. If he turns into Matt Ryan from Atlanta, that would be a great, great type of career trajectory. And Matt Ryan coming out of Boston College was sort of like Mendoza, right? He wasn't a quarterback that was going to take off and run around a lot. But again, coming out of Boston College, he could go up the gut, run a little bit, big quarterback, arm could deliver the ball everywhere. I think Matt Ryan's arm talent probably a little better than what Mendoza's is naturally. He really reminds me of Goff. When he's in rhythm and things are schemed up well for him, he can just dissect you. He can pick you apart. A lot of shotgun type stuff with Goff. Play action game really well. And what was Goff's Achilles heel this year? When pressure was after him, it just, you know, pressure and then always things break down. And I think that's a little bit of Mendoza as well. And I just want to give him a little credit about how good he was in the red zone. People don't talk about this enough. Zero interceptions, 27 touchdowns, zero interceptions inside the red zone. When it's time to score touchdowns, he's finding ways not to put three on the board. I'm getting you six, and I'm not turning it over. And that doesn't include all the touchdowns he had in the college football playoff, right? So you're talking about over 30 touchdowns and no interceptions in the red zone. That is money. It is invaluable. I can't place what that is worth for an NFL team, but if I know we can get down here, Matt, inside the five, inside the seven, and I can throw it and you're not going to give it away, like that is money right there. And he is excellent at that.
I like that. And if we're talking about a guy who's on this Matt Ryan, Jared Goff, I think Trevor Lawrence is in the, he's just a more of an athletic version than those two guys, especially Goff. He's in that same though access of quarterbacks. If he's that guy and he's with the Raiders first overall, like just before we move on from him, you think if you had a dynasty like Superflex rookie draft, is he a guy that you'd be considering at the 101 over a guy like Jeremiah Love, or is this one of those where you're not giving the quarterback bump? We'll talk about Love obviously when we do the running backs, but I think we all agree he's pretty freaking awesome. He's the favorite to be the 101 in normal dynasty leagues, but Superflex, is Mendoza a guy that you're giving that quarterback bump to, or are you still sticking with the great running back?
I think you can think about it. I think you can consider it, and I would know why people would want to do that. But it would be Love. And we'll save the reasons why. I think he's a worthy candidate, but in this year's crop, it's probably still Love. But I'll say this, if you're in that type of dynasty league and you need a quarterback and you're telling me I'm getting Mendoza at the 102, sign me up. Like, great, I'll take that. You know, can't get Love, but I get Mendoza at 102, the clear-cut QB1. I am money with that pick this year.
Yeah, I think I view it the same way. I am really excited about Fernando Mendoza, and I'm glad we gave him a full breakdown here, because like I said, I think he's just not going to get discussed enough because he's just the consensus top guy in the class, consensus 101, but he's a really fun player to watch. Like if anybody out there who's watching the show and like you haven't checked him out yet, just spend some time watching, like really watching some cut-ups of him and forget about like, yeah, the kind of what you've heard about him as a quarterback. He's a really fun player to watch, and I honestly came away watching him in isolation, watching these Indiana receivers, liking Mendoza even more than I thought I was going to, which is cool because he's going to be the friggin' first pick in the draft. Let's get to the next consensus quarterback here, which is Ty Simpson out of Alabama. Ty Simpson, 6'1", 211, again, out of the University of Alabama. There's a shot that this guy goes in the first round, Ray. Let me just throw it to you like this. Do you think he's somebody that you view as a first-round quarterback, or just kind of where are you with Ty Simpson?
No, I don't. I don't view him as a first-round talent at the quarterback position, but I understand the problem that the NFL quarterback rooms across the 32s. I see the conundrum at place here. I understand what's going on. Is you look around, and it's Geno Smith starting again. We're talking about Tua. The same Tua that people wanted nothing to do with. Now he should be the locked and loaded starter in Atlanta. Matt, we talked about this during the season. I was like, hey, there's a little bit of a quarterback problem here, and I think we're going to get a lot of retreads come back. Do I think he's a first-round caliber talent? No. Do I think a team may take him in round one because of the scarcity at the position and how fragile it is right now in the NFL with veteran quarterbacks? Maybe, but I wouldn't do it. I do not believe that he is of the caliber to take round one. But this is the problem, right? This is the problem where you have a class where there's one guy and then you're trying to find somebody else. And it feels like we are trying to talk him into round one more than him being a true round one prospect, especially of all the things that we've seen over the past couple of years about QBs and just opportunities and starts in college. And we'll talk about that through his, through this breakdown, but he's lacking some of that stuff majorly.
Yeah. And with quarterbacks, just obviously destination is destiny, right? Where if he, I think if he lands with the right team, I can actually see it working out for Ty Simpson in a way that, like, I bet there's some teams out there that kind of wish they had taken Tyler Shuck in the first round of last year's class, even though I don't think Shuck was a first round quarterback. And obviously he was complicated because older prospect, the whole deal. But if he'd gone to a situation that wasn't the Saints in an offense that I think really fits him well, maybe it doesn't work out. Or Jackson Dart in New York, you know, it's kind of a bit of an analogous situation that way, where I didn't think Dart was like a first round quarterback necessarily, but I don't think the Giants regret that pick at this point. It's a big reason why people were kind of excited about that job and Harbaugh and the whole deal. But Simpson, though, I think has a chance to be that guy, but it's like, I do think he needs to go to the right spot. I think he needs to, just overall, I think he needs to sit. Like, he's a guy that I think will need some time. But I can see also, Ray, why there's sort of been this groundswell from folks who have been watching the Ty Simpson tape, where they're like, I really like this, especially the type of people who like him. A lot of pro style work on his film, honestly, to me, what I saw. Like, he is, unlike Fernando Mendoza, where it's where's the middle of the field throws, where's like, it's a lot of RPO stuff. Ty Simpson, he rips throws over the middle. I mean, I've been watching Jeremy Bernard. It's just dig route, dig route, dig route, dig route. And that ball, like, snaps out of his hands on those middle of the field throws. So I understand why people can talk themselves into a quarterback like this.
Over the middle field work for Simpson is exceptional. Second most completions, sixth highest PFF grade on intermediate throws of all, amongst all draft eligible quarterbacks. That's where he earns his paycheck. He's fearless over the middle of the field. When things are clicking for Ty Simpson, the rhythm, the releases, he gets the ball out with urgency. I think he's got good footwork inside the pocket, and he's got high IQ to be a first-year full-time starter. And if you didn't watch the Alabama college football season, they were calling for his head after week one. When they went out there and lost to Florida State and he didn't look, people were like, get him out of there. Let's see Austin Mack. Let's see Keleon Russell. Anybody but Simpson. And for him to bounce back and get them to the place that they were this year in the college football playoffs, it's a testament to him and what he clearly learned sitting behind Jalen Milroe, waiting his time, didn't transfer. There are some good things to like about Simpson. There are. Middle of the field work is exceptional. Footwork is good. But man, you see some of the weaknesses on the screen, Matt, and that is what's concerning, especially how much we've talked about just starts, right? Only 15 career starts. But we talked about Mendoza versus pressure. Simpson, it is Shedeur Sanders-esque whenever he's faced with pressure. I mean, he's running backwards. And he's taking sacks. It is bad when there's pressure. And then just the decline. I think Ian Hardett, shout out to Ian, he had put a tweet out at some point. Matt, you probably saw it. It was Ty Simpson's beginning of the season versus the end of the year arc. And it was like the Game of Thrones horse, right? Just
the horse, beautiful
tail. And then at the end, it's like my son's drawing a picture of it at the end. It just, everything, it just went down. And I mean, when we're thinking about taking somebody 16th overall, top 10, top 12, there it is right there.
There we go.
I don't want to see that, right? I don't want to see that. And in some of the biggest moments, he didn't show up. And here's the thing. I'm not fully blaming Ty Simpson. It was his first year starting in the SEC. Kalen DeBoer, newer coach at Alabama. I'm not blaming him. This was the guy I thought would come back to school for another year, but he probably took a look in that 27 class rearview mirror and said, I don't think I want to compete in that. I get why he's coming out. I understand why people are excited, but this just feels like a trap. It feels like a trap. Or I'll say this. If he sits, like, how many offenses are allowing their quarterback to do that? If I take you year one now, you're not sitting, man. The Jets take him 16, Matt, he ain't sitting. You're playing, baby. You got to get out there and do something. So it's tough. It's a tough spot for him to be in because he does have some physical tools to his game. Landing in the right situation is paramount. And I don't think the Jets at 16, that's the right situation for him.
No, I completely agree. Like, no to that. That's like, oh God, it's not going to work for Ty Simpson. I even think, like, you know, Cleveland, which to me, there's just been so much like pop from big draft analysts that I feel like somebody's told him he's going round one. I mean, then maybe that's why he came out, honestly. You know, I know he's 27 classes stacked, the whole deal, but still, I feel like that's probably part of the reason somebody said they're going to take him round one. And again, if you have the right system or the right situation, the Steelers, if Aaron Rodgers comes back, I don't know that I love him in Mike McCarthy's offense necessarily. I'd love to see him in an offense like with Mike LaFleur and what I imagine they're going to be running in Arizona, because it's a lot of over the middle throws. I think he fits really well in that type of offense, like something that comes off that McVay tree. But also, I mean, we're going to get a month through of like Jacoby Brissett and Gardner Minshew or whatever, and people are going to be like, let's see Ty Simpson. And I'm going to be like, how about September and October of next year? How about that's when we see Ty Simpson? Like, how much patience really is there? But a situation like the Steelers, people are probably not going to want Aaron Rodgers to get benched for Ty Simpson. Like, you could probably work that. So I think there's a path forward for him. But kind of player comparison wise, where did you land on Ty Simpson?
Oh, Mac Jones for the ceiling and the floor. I think the ceiling is Mac Jones. I think the ceiling and the floor are Mac Jones. Yeah, what did Michael Jordan say? The ceiling is the roof, or the roof is the ceiling?
Yeah,
I think he's a Mac Jones level of player, and you probably can sub in 10 different quarterbacks that fit this archetype. Mac, in my opinion, was a far better prospect coming out than Ty Simpson. And I know the bias of what Mac Jones is today kind of skews what he was coming out of Alabama. He was masterful that year at Alabama. I mean, him, Devontae Smith, Najee Harris, absolutely insane levels of production. He broke Joe Burrow's completion percentage record that year at Alabama. I think he's a Mac Jones kind of player in the right system, in the right scheme, with the right playmakers like a Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle around you, things could be well, because we're not going to ask you to be the truck. You just need to be the trailer and make sure you do your job. But if he lands in a spot where he's asked to go get it, to win games, to be that guy, and I think about Cleveland, him in that quarterback room, I don't think that would end well either. With Watson and Sanders and Gabriel, he's just got to hit the right spot. And how many times has that happened, Matt? You've done this long enough. How many times do we say, if they land in this spot, it can work? And then it's the Browns that draft you, right? It's the damn Dallas Cowboys that take him somewhere, right? And you're just like, what? How is this even going to work out? So I think Mac Jones is my player comp for him, floor and ceiling.
Yeah, right. And it's like, all right, if it works out, the ceiling is Mac Jones. It's maybe not the most exciting thing in the entire world. So yeah, I like him. I liked him maybe more than I thought I was going to like him, because I'm just such a sucker for guys who will rip it over the middle. That is just the type, aesthetically, it's the type of quarterback I like. But also, by the way, like, Mac Jones listed 6'3", 220. Ty Simpson is much smaller than that, which is kind of why I said, like, he's a little Goff-ish to me. Like, Goff is smaller than people realize. But that's the same family of quarterbacks, right? In a best case scenario, he's like a smaller poor man's Jared Goff. Again, that's like the best case scenario for what we're looking at here, which again, I could see it if somebody wants to take him round one. It is a little bit aggressive here, but we are going to take go ahead.
I was going to say, him versus Bryce, since we're on smaller Alabama quarterbacks, just him versus Bryce. And we know Bryce had all the experience, but is...
Bryce was much better. I mean, listen, I know what Bryce has been in the NFL, but Bryce is much better, especially like improv. You mentioned him getting off script, Ty Simpson. Forget about it, you know, like just not where he's at his best. Bryce was awesome off script in college, and even in the NFL at times he's been awesome. He just like is not toolsy whatsoever. And Ty Simpson, I mean, he's kind of toolsy-ish, but it's just like the size is tough there. And it's also like I'm saying Ty Simpson small. Obviously Bryce Young is super small, so it's a little bit tough there. But I think Bryce Young was a significantly better quarterback prospect than Ty Simpson. But I think like Fernando Mendoza is a better prospect than Bryce Young was coming out, and Bryce Young went first overall. So that's kind of what we're looking at here with these first two quarterbacks. There's definitely a drop off after that, which is a perfect time for us to take our first quick break. When we come back, we've got more quarterback prospects to rip through. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to run through the 2026 NFL draft quarterback class with our guy, Ray Garvin, here. And admittedly, Ray, the rest of the class, a little hit or miss. But I do think these next two guys, at least, are interesting to talk about, starting with Garrett Nussmeier out of LSU, a guy that was supposed to be a little bit higher ranked, one of those guys we talked about earlier. Another player, by the way, I feel like I keep calling these guys. I'm like 6'3", 240. I can call these guys small, okay? I'm not one of these goofball fantasy podcasters. It's like, this guy's too small to put. No. I'm definitely bigger than Garrett Nussmeier, who is a little small, or a little thin at 6'2", 203 here. So another kind of, not the biggest quarterback in the entire world. Give us the rundown on Garrett Nussmeier now that I've embarrassed myself on the internet.
Yeah, Nussmeier, high football IQ. He's got NFL pedigrees and bloodlines. Dad, offensive coordinator, worked with Mike McCarthy. He's in New Orleans right now. So he's been around the game, played in the SEC, high level of competition. And there was a point in time where a lot of people thought this was going to be QB1 here in 2026 because of what he did in the past, right? You talk about 2024, 4,000 yards, 65% completion percentage. There was a lot of enthusiasm around Nussmeier because of his gunslinger mentality. He's fearless. He will try any throw, which is a good and a bad. It's a strength and a weakness of him. NFL bloodline and pedigree and a competitor. He's a fiery competitor. Those of you who don't know, situation down there at LSU with Brian Kelly, it wasn't good. That's why he's no longer there. And Lane Kiffin is in the building. It's really unfortunate to see what happened to Nuss. And the only thing that I can equate it to was there was a time back in the day with Lane Kiffin as the head coach of USC, Matt Barkley was projected to be a top pick in the draft. He decided to go back to school. And that following season, USC fell off the rails. And he dropped from a top pick, I believe he was fourth or fifth rounder. And that's sort of what's happened to Nussmeier here. He was injured coming into the season. I think there are some concerning things on tape, but there's still a little part of me that's like, he's one where if he got an opportunity to play, it would be interesting to see what it would look like at the next level.
I couldn't agree more with that description of it, where number one, you could tell this guy's like it sounds so stupid, but you could tell this guy's a coach's son, really smart. I think he's very aware of aware of the field is the way I would describe him. He gets through reads pretty well. I think he manages tight spaces in the pocket too. Some of these guys are talking about like Simpson and even Mendoza to a degree. Like they take some bad sacks. I didn't see a lot of that with Nussmeier. Like I do think there is just a real, I honestly think he'd be awesome backup quarterback. Like I think he'd be an awesome backup quarterback. Doug Nussmeier, by the way, is the offensive coordinator for Kellen Moore down there in New Orleans. So again, coach's son, 100%. He former Cowboys quarterback coach, Doug Nussmeier. God, there's so much like Cowboys tie in that Saints coaching staff. It's really funny when you actually Scott Linehan is a senior offensive assistant on that staff. A lot of Cowboys stuff there. So Nussmeier in the right offense that feels a little bit like off that tree, I think it could work. But you know, there's definitely some issues here. I think the arm is whatever. Not a ton of mobility. He's a little small. So I do think in an offense that spreads the field out. Maybe a little bit static-ish in the routes. I wouldn't hate him as a dice roll for a team like that.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. The issues are real, and you don't drop like that. And we'll talk about this with Alar, but you don't drop like that without real concerns. The arm strength is not there. Okay, he does not have what you would consider a live arm. And then when you combine that with the gunslinger mentality, you're asking for. You're asking for problems. And that was an issue at LSU. He would just, there were times where you're like, you're making not bad throws, Matt, unnecessary. Why are you doing this? Just throw it out of bounds. Dirt it. Get it to the tight end. He makes unnecessary throws at times. You see it right there on the screen. Reckless decision making, vulnerable to interior pressure because he's not a great athlete, and limited arm strength. So again, can he land in the right situation to highlight some of the things that he does, the process and anticipatory throw windows? The talent around him at LSU wasn't it wasn't great this past season, but I'm not going to use that as an excuse. And I'm not going to use the injury as an excuse to go from 4,000 yards to a little under 2. There was some stuff that was going on with him as well.
Yeah, he had what, like the core injury that he talked, a core muscle injury that he talked about, which certainly affects quarterback play. There's no question about that. Like, I mean, I do, it's not an excuse, but it might be a reason for why you kind of just, it didn't feel the same for him overall. But I your description of him as a gunslinger that doesn't have the arm to write, like, doesn't have the arm to write the check, or doesn't cash the checks that his arm writes, essentially.
Yep.
It is, if that works out, it's like Brock Purdy, right? Because Purdy has that. Now, Purdy's obviously, I think, gotten better. But if it works out, it's Brock Purdy, where Purdy, it doesn't have a great arm, but he's so anticipatory that it works out for him. Baker is kind of like this, but Baker has a better arm than Nussmeier, no question. Ryan Fitzpatrick, maybe, like, if he, because he's so reckless and he has no, again, he, Fitz didn't have like the most talent in the world. I wouldn't hate it if like the Jets took a dice roll on him, like take him in the third round, fourth round, whatever. If it doesn't work out, you flush it and you take a guy high in the draft next year. But there's talent on that Jets roster. There's kind of, it's the type of offense, I guess, whatever Frank Reich is going to run, I think could work out for him. So that's sort of just how I view him. I wouldn't hate him as a fourth round pick, third round pick, where maybe he's, you just got to realize that it might be one and done. That's it. But like maybe ends up just being a good backup.
You nailed it. If I can get him in round 3 to the Jets, what do you have to lose? Throw him out there. See what you have. If it doesn't work out, we're drafting another quarterback next year anyway. The Brock Purdy comp is perfect. And what did people say about Brock the first couple of years of his career? How does he keep getting away with these throws?
Yeah.
Should have been a pick six. He's the luckiest quarterback alive because he's
luckiest
exactly
quarterback,
what you said.
Yeah.
He's a gunslinger with a limited arm, but the system works. So that's sort of where I feel like on the best case scenario, right? Could he be a Brock Purdy level quarterback? And that is ceiling level outcome. But yeah, that's exactly where he kind of lands for me, is right around that range.
I come back to the 2021 class where Kenny Pickett went in the first round. It's like Matt Corral went in the third round that year. And like, obviously that was one where the Panthers took Matt Corral in the third round. And then immediately next year, it's like, okay, well, we got to trade up first overall and get Bryce Young. I believe I'm getting my story straight there. It might've been the 2022 class, excuse me.
22
class. Yeah. 22. And then next year they're like, all right, we got to trade up first overall, get Bryce Young. Like if I'm the Jets, I wouldn't mind that, cause you got a bajillion picks. If Matt Corral could go in the freaking third round, I'd be okay if Garrett Nussmeier, you know, is just like a long-term backup. Okay. Now that Matt Corral has been slammed here, let's go to the next guy on our list. Drew Aller of Penn State, 6'5", 228. Ray, I mean, he's like the best quarterback prospect of all time if you just don't watch him play, because the tools are super obvious. Not great results and a lot of questions on the film for Drew Aller. What do you think about him?
I mean, I'll say this. With the prototypical size, I think he's got the best arm, just pure arm talent, probably the best in the class. I mean, the arm talent, the strength is there, the size is there, all of that. Football IQ is really good. He can attack all three levels of a defense, short, intermediate, and deep. He really likes to live outside the numbers and downfield because he's got a big arm, 6'5", 230 pounds. He's got functional mobility, and the thing that you've heard about Aller every step of the way are the behind-the-scenes intangibles that everybody comes away impressed with him, right?
Yeah.
There's a reason why there was a point in time throughout the draft process last year, Dane Brugler said he was the number 2 overall player on his board. If he would have come out before the Oregon playoff game, people said he should have come out. He would have been the number 1 pick in the draft last year before that Oregon game. All the physical tools are there, but man, you talk about inconsistencies, accuracy under duress. There are head-scratching moments where you're just like, what are you doing? What are you seeing? What are you feeling? Holds the ball way too long for deep shots. He doesn't feel pressure, doesn't navigate rushers around him. He just takes sacks, and you can't take sacks like that in the college level, and you damn sure can't do it at the next level. 24/7 Sports, they ran a piece on his sort of historic draft fall. And the synopsis of this article, Matt, was this does not happen to guys who were thought of, viewed as highly as Drew Aller without there being real, real concerns about his game. I still think there's going to be a team that's like, we're going to take this ball of clay, bring him into our infrastructure and let him bake for a little bit and see what comes out of the oven. Now, you know how it is with baking. It is a science. If you mess up a measurement, Matt, it doesn't come out right. I don't know how Aller's going to come out once a team drafts him, but there is a lot to like and a lot to dislike about his game.
I love thinking about him as a cake, right? A bread, really, like a big loaf of bread, right? Where if you get those measurements exactly right, you read it on the recipe sheet, ooh, it's going to be good. It's a big, nice sourdough, the whole deal. Love a good slice of bread. I mean, I'm not allowed to eat bread on the current cut, but I mean, theoretically, the idea of eating bread sounds great. And you just read off all the things we talk about, the tools, the size. I mean, he's as a quarterback power option, I think he'd be great. And he's tough as nails. I mean, that's great. But there's just like no rhythm to his game whatsoever. The quick game is like, it's a mess. It's a complete mess. So yeah, that moldable ball of clay, the dough you're working, like, can you bake it just right? It's a pure developmental thing to me. Pure developmental with Drew Aller. So like, great. Like, does it work out? I have no idea. I don't even know where you take a guy like this, but very fascinating player and kind of a good wrinkle in this quarterback class, to go here. So definitely you had the floor comp as Christian Hackenberg on the dock. That's perfect. Yeah. Like, he could just be like, well, this ain't gonna work out at all. That's that. Even if it's Penn State, same school, like it totally makes sense. So I'm gonna throw three guys out here. Carson Beck, a name that everybody knows, probably more pure backup. And then Cole Payton and Talon Green are interesting guys from a fantasy standpoint because they can move a little bit. But what are your thoughts on Beck, a guy that, again, has been in college football forever, big dude. So what do you think about him?
Yeah, backup for Beck. He had UCL surgery in 2024, and it definitely took his arm talent down. You can tell this year. He didn't have the same zip on the ball that he had at Georgia. Experienced. But you watch it and you see there's something not there. I think he's the kind of guy that if you needed him to fill in for a week, you can game plan around a 25-attempt Carson Beck and try to get through with the strong rushing attack. But overall, he doesn't do some of the other things well enough to make you really want to take a bet on him, especially in fantasy. He's not going to run around. Doesn't have a huge arm, like, oh, pro ready, proven winner, elite in structure. Like, those are like fine NFL things, but for fantasy, just tough for Carson Beck.
Yeah, total backup type. The arm, God, is. I mean, I've watched him a ton early in his career. You know, Georgia, stuff like that. Just like, he just doesn't have that the ability to rip it anymore. What we saw in Miami this last year. The other guys, like I said, Talon Green, Cole Payton. These guys can move. Talon Green destroyed the combine. I've seen 100 Cole Payton, Taysom Hill comps. So with those guys, any like intrigue on them as actual maybe long-term quarterbacks? Because again, if from a fantasy standpoint, these guys can move, they'll put up points.
Yeah, Talon Green, I've got his ceiling comp at Terrell Pryor and the floor comp is Anthony Richardson. So a wide but short band here for Green. I think the reason why we talk a little more about Green and Payton is they do offer something different than the Beck, than the Aller, than the Nussmeier. They are very good athletes and they can run. Is there a role for these guys in the NFL? Matt, part of me wants to say, sure, just let them bake and develop. But you and I both know the NFL doesn't work quite like that. You have to be able to do some of the things that's required as a freaking quarterback, which is throw the ball. Green, generate 6'6", 230, 4'3", dual threat. His arm is top tier. I mean, sometimes I think he's out there. I don't know what he's doing. You're just like, what are you doing? This is Kentucky we're playing against, man. Make the easy look easy. So for him, pure developmental guy, and I wouldn't be shocked if at some point you see him do some different things at the next level. And I'm not here to do that. I'm not I don't want to be the guy saying you can't be a quarterback, but it just at his size with his athleticism, I'm not making the same comparison. But there was a white quarterback that transitioned to wide receiver from Arkansas some years ago. He was drafted round one. Taylen Green's not going round one like old Matt Jones did back in the day. But Matt Jones took his quarterbacking prowess from Arkansas and parlayed that into a fine NFL wide receiver career for a couple of years. I'm not saying he's going to be Matt Jones, but I definitely see Green maybe trying some different things at the next level.
Yeah, that's totally possible. And I'm sure he's doesn't have the same extracurricular activities as Matt Jones either. So that certainly should help him out a little bit. But yeah, those are two guys definitely to know in the draft. Although, like you said it perfectly, we talk about quarterback development. Doesn't happen a lot in and even for a guy like Drew Aller, that doesn't happen a lot in the NFL. So there you go. All right, we are going to take our last quick break. We come back, we're going to rapid fire through a few more guys in the class that you guys should know about. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're going to wrap this up as we will every week with Ray's diamond in the rough pick at each position. That's right, Ray. Every week you're going to have to come up with a diamond in the rough. And I think you're really searching in the rough here with this particular position. So let's just talk through remaining quarterbacks here. If you got a diamond in the rough pick, you know, just someone maybe worth a dart throw. I don't know about third round, fourth round of like your super flex league. Just maybe just keep them on waiver wire speed dial. I'll throw out a few names. If you've got other ones, go for it. Luke Altmaier, Cade Klubnik, Sawyer Robinson, Diego Pavia. Any of these guys light your fire? Diego Pavia, by the way, was 5'9". Come on, what are we talking about?
That's me and Pavia. Me and Pavia are brothers, 5'9" brothers right there. Let's go.
All right. Well, I don't know. He's a pretty gritty guy. You're a pretty gritty guy. So there you go. I think that's about where all the similarities end there. And I'm saying that complimentary to you, by the way. Any of these guys you think are a good diamond in the rough pick for people out there?
Yeah. Cubic zirconia diamond, but Cade Klubnik would be my choice. Cade Klubnik, 18 months ago, people thought this guy could be the number one overall pick, top quarterback in the class. He's got the career starts. He played in a P4 conference. He can run. He's got the high school pedigree. Clemson was an absolute disaster this year. You name a Clemson prospect and they pretty much tumbled their stock from Peter Woods to DJ Parker. We'll see what happens with Avion Terrell. But that whole Clemson team fell off the rails. No coach. Dabo Sweeney's gone. This is still one of the quarterbacks that's going to be a day three pick that if I were sitting there with like the 410, the last couple of picks in my Superflex rookie draft, just so I don't have to blow fab on him on that first waiver run or that priority, Klubnik is still probably the type of guy that will end up on a roster as a backup. He can run around. The arm is fine. Experience is there. So if I were going to pick one cubic zirconia diamond from this rough, it would be Cade Klubnik.
Yeah, he's got tools. Doesn't string them together on a consistent basis whatsoever. Gets fooled by coverage is way too much. But, I mean, I do think there's definitely something to him there. Maybe like a long-term backup. But I think that's the right pick out of this group. No question about that. Ray, it was the right pick to have you on the show for our Prospect Deep Dive series. This was absolutely great. I can promise the people out there, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, when we get back together for these other positions, there'll be a little bit more exciting groups to break down the quarterbacks. But this was a great show, and I appreciate you doing it, man.
I appreciate you having me on, and it'll be fun to talk through these other positions as well, man. Thanks for having me back, Matt.
It's good to have you back. It's good to see you again, my friend. Very excited for the rest of these shows. That is going to do it for us here today. On Monday, Mock Draft Monday continues. We have Trevor Sikkema of Pro Football Focus and the NFL Stock Exchange podcast. We got him on the show coming up on Monday. That's going to be absolutely electric. And then on Tuesday, we'll be back once again live with Justin Boone as we start our Teams That Shape the Draft series. We're going to start off this year looking at teams with multiple first-round picks because there's quite a few of them. That's going to happen right here live at 2 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday. Until then, we are out.